a look at what happened. Oh.
Sandy Rios with you. That happened. If you have, unless you're living under a rock, you know exactly what that was from. The former president of the United States, Donald J. Trump, was almost assassinated on Saturday evening in Pennsylvania. And of course, we're going to talk about the details of that. I'm sure you've been watching. I just can't imagine that you haven't. But we will bring you the details. But more than that, I'm going to bring you an update. And more than that, I'm going to explain with you and worship with you about what God has done, not just in sparing President Trump's life, the miracle of his head turning at the last minute, the miracle of that bullet not just striking him right in the head and killing him instantly, but the miracle of other things too. And I won't do it right now, but I want to tell you other things that happened that just have me rejoicing this morning. I'm really just on my knees in my heart, not in this moment I'm at the mic, but just thanking and praising God for so many wonderful things that have transpired since the last time I talked to you. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to give you an update because there's a lot of things that are happening right now. I tell you, I'm having trouble because my inbox is just rolling and rolling. There's so much information. So by the time you hear this, well, there'll be a lot more information, but we're going to do our best to be faithful to what we know right now. This is Sandy Rios, by the way, on Sandy Rios 24/7. Bruce will be joining me in a second. That's my husband, former FBI agent, who has a lot of observations also about what we watched or saw or heard on Saturday night and since that time. Life is sacred. And, you know, I think when you watch something like we watched on Saturday night, you understand why life is precious. We saw President Trump nearly get killed. We didn't realize at the time that another man actually was killed in the shooting, an innocent bystander. His name was Corey Comparatore, a former fire chief in that area, the father of a couple of girls, a man who threw himself over his wife and daughter to save their lives, who is a strong believer, a leader in his church, a leader in his community, was 50 years old. And so we grieve. Our hearts just skip a beat. And even the most callous, I think, for the most part, among us realizes that life is sacred. When the breathing stops and the heart stops beating, we understand something major has taken place, and it is the loss of life. And it is the same thing in the womb of a mom when a baby has been injected with something or the forceps go in to dismember its little body. A life is being taken, and that's why preborn tries to show moms successfully, shows moms in crisis pregnancy the photo, the ultrasound of their baby so they understand this is living, breathing, moving person with a heartbeat that needs to be saved. And when women see that little thing, that picture, they see the heart beating, the baby moving, most of them say, I cannot do this. It is the most powerful way to save the lives of babies and to just practice what we know to be true, that life is sacred in the womb. And when a man is shot at a podium who used to be a president, both lives are sacred. It's a holy moment. And we have no right to mess with it, none whatsoever. If you want to help preborn, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. And make your most generous donation. You can call us at 662-821-2040. We've been getting lots of phone calls, and I'm going to be using them. This week is my plan to do that. We'll do a show and feature some of your phone calls and emails. So the email, you can send us an email at sandy@afr.net, sandy@afr.net. You can find us on social media, the usual suspects, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Although I hope that you've found a better way to get your information than social media, because they're messing with it again, and the only platform I know that's fair and free is Twitter. So if you're not on Twitter, you know, this, I've never recommended this. I never have, but I'm going to recommend it because it's generally been for those of us, like in the news, it's the most beneficial for us. But I'm telling you, there are no censors on Twitter. So if you really want to know what's happening in the world, I would suggest you get an account and sign up, and then you'll really know what's happening. Because a lot of people don't know. And we'll get into that later in the election cycle here. All right, well, okay. Today we're going to talk about all things the assassination of President Trump. Also a lot of updates that you may not know. Some incredible things are happening. So I hope you'll stay tuned and listen to this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
My fellow Americans, I want to speak to you tonight about the need for us to lower the temperature in our politics. And to remember, while we may disagree, we are not enemies. We're neighbors, we're friends, co-workers, citizens, and most importantly, we're fellow Americans. We must stand together. Yesterday's shooting at Donald Trump's rally in Pennsylvania calls on all of us to take a step back. Take stock of where we are. How we go forward from here. Thankfully, former Trump is not seriously injured. I spoke with him last night. I'm grateful. He's doing well, and Jill and I keep him and his family in our prayers. We also extend our deepest condolences to the family of the victims who was killed. Corey was a husband, a father, a volunteer firefighter, a hero, sheltering his family from those bullets. We should all hold his family and all those injured in our prayers. Earlier today, I spoke about an ongoing investigation. We do not know the motive of the shooter yet. We don't know his opinions or affiliations. We don't know whether he had help or support, or if he communicated with anyone else. Law enforcement professionals, as I speak, are investigating those questions.
That's the President of the United States, Joe Biden, giving a speech last night, which Fox was bragging on. I'm not in that camp. I'm not bragging on that speech, because you could drive a truck through the things that he just said. And that's just part of it. That's the opening. He's calling for unity. Well, good for him. But he never once mentions that he has been the source of so much of this disunity. If you don't believe me, I'll just remind you with a few clips. This was Joe Biden just a few days ago, clip 16.
Most importantly, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, Trump is a threat to this nation.
Yeah, and he said in a speech to donors just a few days ago, hundreds of donors. It was a phone call. He said, I have one job, and that's to beat Donald Trump. I'm absolutely certain I'm the best person to be able to do that. So we're done talking about the debate. It's time to put Trump in a bullseye. He said also on his Twitter feed, Donald Trump is a genuine threat to this nation. He's a threat to our freedom. He's a threat to our democracy. He's literally a threat to everything America stands for. And oh, not so long ago, in a speech, he said, Trump is a rapist and a dictator in waiting. And then he said, of course, this is the same, repeat, I think, of the one that call that he made. He's a genuine threat to this nation. He's a threat to our freedom. He's a threat to our democracy. He's literally a threat to everything America stands for. So I think if Joe Biden really wanted to bring unity, my personal opinion is he would apologize for saying those things. And he would also order on the air last night that the Secret Service beef up their security at the Republican convention and that he call for the people of Milwaukee to stand down. Stand down. Let's stop this violence. But he didn't do that. I think it was a show. He's trying, you know, he wants to be the candidate. His party, lots of his party, are trying to get him disqualified from that position. And he's fighting for his right to stay on the ballot because he believes he's the only one that could beat Donald Trump. Plus, he needs the money coming in from foreign governments. So I know his motives are totally pure. And the things he said earlier, he just didn't mean, right? Well, he said a few other things that really ticked me off. And so we're going to listen at least to part of it. Here's the next part. Here it is.
Tonight, I want to speak to what we do know. A former president was shot. An American citizen killed while simply exercising his freedom to support the candidate of his choosing. We cannot, we must not go down this road in America. We've traveled before throughout our history. Violence has never been the answer. Whether it's with members of Congress of both parties being targeted and shot, or a violent mob attacking the Capitol on January 6th, or a brutal attack on the spouse of former Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, or information and intimidation on election officials, or the kidnapping plot against the sitting governor, or an attempted assassination on Donald Trump. There is no place in America for this kind of violence, or for any violence ever. Period. No exceptions.
Okay, so here's what's happening, folks. And I want to explain it this way. You've heard me say, and you lived through it yourselves, you recall 9/11, right? Everyone, pretty much, a lot of you are younger, don't know it as well. But I'll tell you what happened. As soon as the Islamists on the plane targeted the World Trade Center and the airline that went down in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and the Pentagon, there was a lot of anger. They were all Islamists. They were all Muslim. And there was an anger toward Muslim Americans. There was anger toward Muslims in the world. A natural anger of the American family being attacked by Muslims, not anybody else. It wasn't Presbyterians on that flight. It wasn't Catholics. It wasn't like, you know, Mormons. It was Muslim. You could call them extremists. You could say whatever. We didn't know as much about it as we know now. But we knew that, and we were angry. And guess what they did? I had a front row seat because I was debating on television almost every night during those times. I was on CNN right after this happened. And I'll tell you what they did. They turned this thing on us. They turned it and said that those people that wanted to call out Muslim Americans or Muslims in the world anywhere were what? We had a phobia. We were sick. We were Islamophobic. Islamophobic. They took it right out of the playbook of the homosexual movement, homophobic, Islamophobic, and they slapped it on us and accused us of it. And they did it so successfully that even now you cannot, we're just beginning to be able to say things. Well, I didn't ever stop. I know that'll surprise you, but I didn't stop because it's the truth that we have to be very careful because our Islam itself teaches the domination of other cultures and that someday everyone in the world is going to be bow the knee to Allah, and they're trying to make that happen. That's the short, truncated version. But how? Back to now. Now, this is what they're doing. They are trying to draw a moral equivalence between conservatives and progressives. a moral equivalent. This is happening with the media, and I see it because I smell it. I saw it. I smelled it because I've smelled it before. Oh, yeah. You know, in fact, I'll just give you an example.
President Trump and his supporters have contributed to this violent rhetoric as well.
Well, absolutely, George. We were just looking back this morning at some of the things that former President Trump has said. He warned last March of potential death and destruction if he were charged by the Manhattan District Attorney. Our country is being destroyed as they tell us to be peaceful. Trump in January warned of bedlam in the country if the criminal charges against him succeeded. And of course, in March, he said, now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That will be the least of it. He said he was partly joking and that was taken out of context. But those are indeed his words. And you have heard it from supporters as well. And supporters are certainly in some parts angry. And let's remember January 6th. In so many ways for the campaign, January 6th will probably be in the background after yesterday's event. This is a very difficult time for this campaign. I'm sure this week in Milwaukee that President Trump will highlight this, and President Biden is going to have to figure out how to go forward with this campaign and what exactly they say.
Okay, so it's President Trump's fault that he was nearly assassinated. It was his rhetoric. So they proceed to say that Trump said there's going to be a bloodbath and all of the things that... Now, look, I just want to make a distinction here. I think there's a difference between predicting how people are going to respond if something happens to you as a public figure than accusing someone of being Hitler, of wanting to be a dictator, of wanting to destroy the country by violent means, which is, well, I think, you know, the purview of the left. Here's clip 8.
Of course, it's Trump is a Nazi time again.
Let's deal with Hitler, okay?
I don't think it's hyperbolic to say that. I mean, that is Mussolini Hitler-like language.
Trump's affinity for Hitler was always covered under an umbrella of his stupidity.
Echoing Hitler's words.
Listen to this.
Well, Hitler was duly elected.
That's right. Echoing the hateful rhetoric of Adolf Hitler.
It echoes Hitler.
That's the kind of language Hitler used in Mein Kampf.
About vermin and Hitler and Mussolini.
That's a horrifying clip. That's a fascist clip.
You're just going full on Hitler.
It's from Hitler's Germany.
We just need to say, for the record, that the term vermin was really effectively used by Adolf Hitler.
Echo dictators like Hitler.
With language evoking authoritarian figures like Adolf Hitler.
Donald Trump parroted the autocratic language of Adolf Hitler.
Talk about the brilliance of Hitler's generals.
Correct.
General Kelly, yes.
So President Trump is Hitler. Now, I think the world kind of hates Hitler. That's the last thing you invoke. That's what I'm told. You never talk about Nazis or compare someone to Nazis or Hitler unless you know they're Nazis or Hitler. And of course, Hitler deserved to die. He was a mass murderer. And that's what Trump is, they say. That's what Trump is as they whip people up in a frenzy. President Trump, on the other hand, says that Biden is the worst president we've ever had. He says things like that. Oh, yeah, he doesn't like Biden, but he does not use this kind of derogatory stuff. So the turning is happening. The twisting of your mind to say that you can't be angry. You can't fight back, or you're causing this. And let me go back to what Biden said in that clip 23. In fact, let's listen to that again.
Tonight, I want to speak to what we do know. A former president was shot, an American citizen killed, while simply exercising his freedom to support the candidate of his choosing. We cannot, we must not go down this road in America. We've traveled before throughout our history. Violence has never been the answer, whether it's with members of Congress of both parties being targeted and shot, or a violent mob attacking the Capitol on January 6th, or a brutal attack on the spouse of former Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, or information and intimidation on election officials, or the kidnapping plot against the sitting governor, or an attempted assassination on Donald Trump. There is no place in America for this kind of violence, or for any violence ever. Period. No exceptions.
Okay, so I feel like I'm getting ready to analyze. You've heard, if you listen to me much, you've heard me analyze certain pastors or people in the Christian world. I think of Russell Moore, and I always say that 85% sounds good. the other 15% is off, and it's so off it confuses people. And so, that's the kindest thing I can say about this. Let me bring Bruce into this conversation. Hi, sweetheart. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. I want to just run through these, and then certainly want your comments about it. So he ran through, he ticked off a list of ways where the right is violent. The right is just violent. And there's our examples. That mob on the Capitol on January the 6th. Well, I've talked about that enough that I suppose I shouldn't have to say it, but could I just say that was characterized in a way that was false? That mob was incited by bad actors who we think were planted in that crowd, and bad actors who were also policemen and causing just... So that's not exactly... They didn't go as a mob to the Capitol, but they became one. Many of them did when they saw what was happening. The kidnapping plot against Gretchen Whitmer. Okay, anybody remember that story? That happened right before January the 6th, and we think that was the deception used by the Michigan authorities and by Gretchen Whitmer, and that was the kind of the template for what happened on January the 6th, because the FBI agent in charge of that was then assigned to Washington, D.C., and the same thing happened where FBI, we know now there were more FBI undercover guys involved in that plot than there were these hapless, I think half a dozen guys without any money, without any resources. It was the FBI who funded that, who helped make the plans. It was a total setup for these people. So that's not exactly a great example. Then we have, he said, members of Congress on both sides. Really? So I do remember a Bernie Sanders supporter, because Bruce, you and I lived in Arlington at the time, and right across 395, a Bernie Sanders supporter went to a park in Alexandria where Republicans, he knew they were Republicans, he said he was.
He asked about them.
Yeah, are these Republicans? So he goes in and he tries to assassinate all of these guys practicing for the congressional baseball game. And he gets taken down, but he nearly kills Steve Scalise, and a few others are hit. A lot of our friends were there. So that's the congressman. But the congressman on the right, left, that was the Democratic congresswoman that was taken down, as I recall, was Gabby Gifford, Bruce. Remember the story about that?
I do.
So Gabby Gifford was shot in Arizona, which was tragic, but there were other people shot. In fact, a Republican judge, a federal judge, was shot and killed. No one ever talks about that. We don't have any way of knowing that this shooter was targeting Gabby Gifford because she was or that he was even targeting her because he shot, I think, 16 people in the process. So not exactly the same. And when I think, Bruce, about the violence, Pelosi's husband was with a gay lover in the house. It was a gay lover quarrel, and it was not the right targeting Nancy Pelosi's husband.
Yeah, there was absolutely no proof, regardless of what version you take as the truth. There was absolutely no indication that was politically motivated or motivated by someone from the right incentivizing this person to go attack Paul Pelosi.
You know, honey, and you think about all the violence that's been incited by Black Lives Matter, by Antifa, and he says nothing to say about that. So this is a lopsided account, and they're trying to create moral equivalence.
You know, that quote-unquote unity or bring everyone together speech, I think it did anything. But, there was cherry-picking, as you were talking about, by Biden. You know, he didn't mention the attack that was stopped against Brett Kavanaugh.
No.
He doesn't mention
the attempted assassination of Brett and his family.
Yeah, a man with a gun outside their residence. He doesn't mention that. He doesn't mention the ongoing harassment, which could turn violent at any time, of some of the Supreme Court justices on the right. You've already mentioned he didn't mention the shooting at the congressional baseball game of only Republicans. And, you know, this is, to me, Here's what's going on here with Biden. He's not worried about apologizing to Donald Trump or lowering the temperature or talking to conservatives. I think Joe Biden sees this as his opportunity to revive his candidacy.
I do too, absolutely.
He's showing, quote unquote, strong leadership. He's showing he can stay up past 8 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah.
If you look what happened on Saturday night, he was in Delaware, where he spends almost every weekend, and we never hear about that. But he's not at the White House, so he's in Delaware, and President Trump gets shot. He doesn't leave for Washington, D.C., Biden, until like 6 hours later at midnight. And his people made sure they notified the press that, hey, Biden is, you know, he's up at midnight and he's going back to Washington, D.C. And then he made a statement. And the statement was nothing, really. It was, talk about a nothing burger. Then he makes a statement during the afternoon on Sunday, which really wasn't much. And then his big production that was going to happen on Sunday evening, he can't even call Donald Trump by his proper title. He calls him the former Trump instead of the former President Trump. That was not an apology. That was not an effort to tone down the effort. You know what that was? That was like, well, yeah, I know we did something bad here, but you guys have done a lot of bad things
too. That's right. I want to remind you of this.
It was an equivalency statement, not an apology.
Yeah. I want to turn also, you know, he's not alone in this. There have been us. I think most of my listeners know this, but it's always good actually to be reminded. There have been so many things said about President Trump leading up to this that are so vile. In fact, I think of Rick Wilson, who's with the Lincoln Project. Let's just hear what he said not long ago. This is clip 7.
Can't just sit back on the sidelines and say, oh, well, don't worry, this will all work itself out. They're still going to have to go out and put a bullet in Donald Trump.
Yeah, so then there's a montage of, here's a whole group of Democrats, and then include Nancy Pelosi, and you'll hear Maxine Waters. And I just want you to hear, be reminded of the things that they've been saying about President Trump since 2016 and before. This is clip 13.
I just don't even know why there aren't uprisings all over the country, and maybe there will be.
People need to start taking to the streets. This is a dictator.
You know, there needs to be unrest in the streets for as long as there is unrest in our lives.
Enemies of the state.
Show me where it says that protests are supposed to be polite and peaceful.
Do something about your dad's immigration practices, you feckless.
When they go low, we kick.
How do you resist the temptation to run up and wring her neck?
Biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized right up to the right.
I thought he should have punched him in the face. I said, even if you lost, he insulted your wife.
Yes.
He came down the escalator and called Mexicans rapists and murderers. He said, well, what do you think I should have done? I said, I think you should have punched him in the face and then gotten out of the race. You would have been a hero.
I'd like to punch him in the face. I said, if we were in high school, I'd take him behind the gym and beat the hell out of him.
Punch some people in the face!
When was the last time an actor assassinated a president?
They're still going to have to go out and put a bullet in Donald Trump, and that's a fact.
Look as his character is stabbed to death.
Where is John Wilkes Booth when you need him?
That's it right there, pulling up.
I have thought an awful lot about blowing up the White House.
A Missouri state senator is under investigation by the Secret Service after saying she hopes President Trump is assassinated.
I will go and take Trump out tonight.
And if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them. And you tell them they're not welcome anymore, anywhere.
And sadly, the domestic enemies to our voting system and our honoring our Constitution are right at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
They're not going to stop before Election Day in November, and they're not going to stop after Election Day. And that should be, everyone should take note of that on both levels, that this isn't, they're not going to let up, and they should not.
If you think we're rallying now, you ain't seen nothing yet.
All right. I wanted you to hear that. And I guess because I'm trying to make a point here. I am not against, you're hearing this big push for tapping down the rhetoric, for being more loving, more cordial. Melania Trump did a beautiful statement about that. I'm not against that at all. What I am against is denying what's true. This hatred and irrational violence against all of us, any reasonable person. It started, Bruce and I were at the inauguration in 2016, and already The rabid mobs were coming into D.C., and they were attacking people attending inaugural events. It started then. So we cannot put our heads in the sand and say, suddenly, this is over, and now let's be not. Just because they tried to, I don't know who, this young man, tried to assassinate President Trump. So that means now suddenly we have to flip on a dime and deny the truth that we have enemies in this country, and I don't see that they're gone yet.
You know, this is the typical response by someone when they get caught doing something wrong. It's like, well, you do it too, and if you stop, I'll stop.
Like your children do that.
Yeah, yeah.
He did it too, Mom.
And if you listen to the words of the people that you just played on that clip, their words are very active. You know, Trump, like you say, Trump will use kind of passive words like Joe Biden is the worst president in history. That's a statement. That's not a call to action. Joe Biden needs to step away as president. That's a statement. But you listen to the words from those people on that tape. Those are active words. Get in someone's face. Assassinate somebody. Punch them in the face. I challenge Democrats or liberals to produce statements by public officials that are Republicans that say those kind of things.
Yeah, and look, Bruce, they acted on them. You think about all those people. You remember that when they would kick them in the heads, knock them down, they were just crazy about, just seemed to be obsessed with doing the most damage possible and beating. And then they shot a guy on the street corner in Seattle. Antifa shot this just guy walking down the street. Do you remember that?
You know, this statement by Biden that the media made such a big deal out of, it's going to lower the temperature. You know what? The temperature is high because of what the Democrats are saying. And I have to tell you, I did not hear one action thing that Joe Biden proposed in that statement. Did he say any groups like BLM or Antifa, I need you to stand down?
No, that's what I'm saying. No, he did not.
Did he tell his fellow Democrats, hey, you need to stop calling for the assassination of Donald Trump, punching people in the face, things like that? None of that was done. Now, on the other side, the Republicans, if we're going to respond to this thing, then we need to respond to it. And when I say we, I don't mean me, but I mean them. They have to respond to it with actual steps. In other words, say, okay, you want to lower the temperature? Here's how you can do that. You can dismiss or delay, I would say ask for a delay in these legal processes going on against Donald Trump, because those things are certainly not helping to bring down the temperature. You know, you're threatening to throw Donald Trump in jail for an extended period of time, keep him off the campaign trail on frivolous charges that we can wait till after the election for those to be adjudicated. Stop these threats. Stop funding the no bail. You know, look at all the things the Democrats have done to increase violence in this country, supporting no bail. Remember Kamala Harris? She was all about that. Like, as soon as people would be arrested, the Democrats were funneling money into these bail funds so the bad actors for BLM and Antifa could get right back out on the street.
They did that in the courtroom when Justice Kavanaugh was in a hearing. They sent all of these protesters in to scream in that courtroom and disrupt the hearing, and then they would bail them out as quickly as they go to jail, and they'd be right back in the courtroom.
They'd be back in the hearing. It was phenomenal. And you know, this is not a phenomenon that has just started either. You go all the way back to when President Obama was in office. You go back to, say, 2014. And I remember his famous statement, if they bring a knife, we'll bring a gun.
Yes.
That's the president of the United States saying something.
Yeah, and as you know, you and I were in the car together about 8 or 9 hours on Saturday driving back from a conference in Nashville, Tennessee. So I was like gathering information like crazy. And one of the things I saw was Barack Obama making nice, you know, on Twitter about how not, you know, now we need to... This is not good. We don't want... And I wrote him back, as you know, because I said, are you sure that I can send this? I said, okay, so Mr. President, and we seem to remember that you said that if we bring a knife, you're going to bring a gun. Was that... I remember that. None of us are fooled by this. We're not fooled by what you actually mean and what you actually have done and want to do. So the point is this, if I can make it clear. I don't think you should be calling for the death of your neighbors and friends ever, ever, ever. We don't do that. We never have done that. That's what they want to say we're doing, but we are not doing that. But we do need to call for the end of this wickedness in our culture. The end of, you know, whether it's abortion or transgenderism or the violence against neighbors or the lack of law enforcement, prosecutors who will not prosecute, who let people and criminals out on the street, ignoring the law on the southern border. We have to call that out and get angry about it. There's nothing wrong with righteous anger. I want to pivot for a second, Bruce, to media, because as we were driving, you will remember, I was reading, I went to CNN because I thought I want to see what they're saying. And their headline was, Trump falls at a rally in Pennsylvania and the Secret Service carry him off. And then I looked further, and Fox was saying there were like firecrackers. Another headline, I think, for NBC said there were loud noises. And I got pretty mad. And then I discovered this. And this is this. This was secret instructions given to news reporters by who? Gosh, I wonder. Maybe the same people that tell them all to say Russian collusion, Russian collusion, Russian collusion, J6, insurrection, insurrection. Whoever gives those instructions out gave the media these instructions. Ready? Hello. Reminder to stick to facts. Don't speculate, editorialize, sensationalize, or jump to conclusions when reporting on the Trump rally incident today. Don't call it an assassination attempt unless authorities say it is. Don't say a shooting targeting Trump or the rally unless authorities confirm that connection. Clarify if it's actual gunshots. That's unclear at the moment. If authorities don't know, then it's okay to say that. Anchors, reminder to be mindful of body language when presenting the story. No need for serious face or adding comments or adjectives for color. No need to say scary moments today at a Trump rally. Just get to the story. At this moment, no need for guests to comment. Again, all this is just a reminder. I know. We all know. That was their instructions, Bruce.
Flabbergasting. That, can you imagine? Again, we always say this, but, you know, put the shoe on the other foot and make it a shooting of Joe Biden. Oh, my gosh. There would be... hyperbole, like the end of the world. But you know, and you know what also really bothered me is even today, news accounts are referring to Donald Trump's wound as a graze.
Really?
A graze of his ear.
They said it penetrated his ear, that it went quite right through.
And you know, feel your ear, and then feel the side of your head, and then see how close your temple is, how close the middle of your brain is. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I don't want anything zipping through my ear. But to call this wound a graze, infers like it just barely touched you. This bullet went through his ear and another inch over, and he'd probably be dead.
Bruce, I'm surprising you with this, but this is the cover of the New York Times magazine, or Sunday Opinion in the New York Times on Sunday. I want you to read that if you don't mind.
Okay, it says, he failed the tests of leadership and betrayed America. Betrayed America. Voters must reject him in November. Donald Trump is unfit to lead. That's the Sunday Opinion piece of the New
York
Times.
Full page. That's on Sunday, after the graze on his ear. Yeah. Or after he fell down at the podium.
Well, even the FBI, they refer to this shooting as an incident. Now, I will tell you, we have a unit called the CIRG, the Critical Incident Response Group, and they do respond to major incidents. But to call an attempted assassination of a former president an incident, I think, talk about downplaying things. And talk about, see, this, here I go. You know, the FBI is in charge of this investigation.
Yes.
And I have to tell you, that makes me nervous right away. And then, you know, you didn't hear a single thing from the FBI on Saturday night, the night of the shooting. You didn't. And finally, they said, we'll be taking the lead in this investigation. People, by statute, the FBI takes the lead in these investigations. It's an assault on a federal official, a federal officer. We always took, as the FBI, the lead on those by statute. It's not, like, well, I guess
we'll
need
do
to
it.
Call it. Yeah.
It's like, we'll do it.
And what's the first thing they do? They're right to their game plan. The first thing they say is, well, we're in the initial stages of the investigation, but we can tell you that this person, Crooks, acted alone. Now, okay, if they have proof of that, that's one thing. However, the social media of Crooks had been scrubbed. I don't know how much of it was captured before the FBI started their investigation. And even as of today, I believe, Monday, they still have not been able to crack the phone, the encryption of his password of Crook's phone. And yet they're telling us they know the motive. They know that he acted alone. They're still working on a motive. Gee, I wonder what the motive was, Sandy. The guy climbed up and took a shot at Donald Trump and tried to hit him in the head with a bullet. I'm not sure you need a genius to figure out what the motive was.
You know, that's what I don't understand. I was going to ask you that. I mean, like, why the motive? The motive was to shoot President Trump. I mean, what? How else can you hear that?
And let's get on this phone. I mean, what? This shooter was 20 years old. What do 20-year-olds live on? They live on their phone. This investigation will be predicated upon probably what is found on that phone in addition to the actions of the shooter. So let's get to it.
Now, Bruce, the other thing we haven't mentioned, and again, the shooter's name, I'm sure you all know, was Thomas Matthew Crooks, 20 years old, 2 years out of college. He had a
high school.
He had won an award on math and science, and yet he was working as an assistant in a dietary organization, dietary assistant. I thought that was so strange, and we don't know much about him, and there's a reason for that, because his social media was gonzo, absolutely gonzo, taken down. You can't even find it, and I know lots of people who are good at this. They can't find anything. In fact, let me read this to you, Bruce. This is from an insider. He says, I have often done image searches for different news stories, etc., of people. I've never, ever gotten the response from Google that they don't have much data on people images. That's the only response I get. Now, if I try to search pictures of this kid, I don't get sort of matches. I get nothing. I get a response that Google doesn't do good at this type of thing, essentially. No possible matches at all given. Even though there are pictures, identical pictures of this child all over the internet right now, all over the media, where the Google search would easily find it. Unbelievable. What a world we live in. We have access to technology to have all this information, but they have locked it down. Didn't used to be like that. The internet used to be fun. I think that's a very, very important lesson for all of us right now. This could happen. It already is happening. You're being shut out from information, even if you don't know it. And that's why we have what we'd say two different Americas, or maybe three or four now.
Why would anyone have any confidence in Christopher Wray's leadership or Merrick Garland? Think about that. The person over the FBI is Merrick Garland,
and the Attorney General. And the guy in the Secret Service is Alejandro Mayorkas.
He's
the one over the Secret Service.
We need to talk about that. That's who's in charge of the Secret Service is Mayorkas. Who has been criticized more by Donald Trump in the government than Mayorkas for his mishandling of the border? And now to find out that he also has purview over the Secret Service, and we'll probably get to that later, all the bad actions by the Secret Service. But think of the motivation on behalf of Merrick Garland, Christopher Wray, who's been basically told, you'll be gone the day I get in office if Trump wins, and Mayorkas.
Mayorkas was impeached by the House, by the way.
Yes.
And the Senate refused to vote on it. Yeah, so those are the characters, the actors, the really nice guys, I wouldn't want to say anything bad about them, who are in charge. I'm being facetious. We have to say that it is dreadful. It's a cast of characters that's suitable for some cartoon villains series. Really, it's just cartoonish. It's so bad. So let's do talk, Bruce. I do absolutely want us to talk about the Secret Service. And I think maybe the best way to do that is to start with a clip. Of course, the leader of the Secret Service is, Kimberly Cheadle. And before she worked at the Secret Service, she was with Pepsi. She was with Pepsi Cola. That's, I think, why Elon Musk tweeted something like, she was, busy dealing with Cheetos before she came to lead the Secret Service. But she was chosen by Biden, and we'll give you just a little snippet. So let's start it this way. Here is an interview with the director of the Secret Service, Kimberly Cheadle.
To expand hiring, they're aiming to have 30% women recruits by 2030, and even allowed YouTube influencer Michelle Carey to train with agents.
But I'm very conscious, as I sit in this chair now, of making sure that we need to attract diverse candidates and ensure that we are developing and giving opportunities to everybody in our workforce, and particularly women.
That workforce will be pivotal for the 2024 campaign season, which for the first time includes a former president who already has lifetime protection.
President Trump.
Agents were there when Donald Trump was arraigned in New York.
We were able to work out the details ahead of time of how that particular day was going to go, but we will always ensure the safety of all of our protectees that we have.
The service has a zero-fail mission. A mission officers are training to uphold, pretending this field is the most famous address in America.
All right, so Bruce, let's talk about the Secret Service. That was Kimberly Cheadle, and she said, I want to get into the diversity thing in a second and the women and Donald Trump's detail. But their performance on Saturday, as a law enforcement professional, what did you think of that?
You know, Sandy, I'm always a little hesitant to criticize too many people. When you're in that kind of a situation, things happen and, everything doesn't always go according to plan. However, that being said, there, I think, is lots to be criticized about the Secret Service that day. And I would say, starting with the lack of manpower that we saw as a protection detail. You know, the Secret Service, they do not have a specified number of agents. Like for a former president, you have this many agents. For a present president, you have this many. That is not how their resources are allocated. Their resources, if they're following protocol, is to allocate them according to the threat level that a protectee is under. Can you think of anyone in this government under a greater threat level than Donald J. Trump? His security detail needs to be immense, especially for an outdoor event. An outdoor event is much harder to protect than an indoor event where everyone has to go through a magnetometer. So you have to account for outside areas that maybe people aren't within the actual venue, but they're outside the venue and have access to see in, or in this case, shoot in from the outside of the venue. And anyone who knows anything about a rifle will know that this shot was a layup as if you were playing basketball. And here's what I want you to do if you don't think that. A pace out, say, 400 feet. Because that's probably the longest distance that this was estimated at. It was 130 yards, so that's 400 feet. And then take a pair of binoculars and stand at one end of the 400 feet and look at an object at the other side of the 400 feet. And look how close that looks. It looks like it's right in front of you. Now, anyone with any kind of training with a gun can hit someone from 400 feet. And here's the Secret Service. They allow this rooftop, which was a perfect shooting platform. It's elevated. It's flat. It's a perfect place to shoot from. And I will say what's really disturbing to me is I just saw this video before we came on. We've seen the one of the person with the red beard saying, we tried to tell the police that there was a guy up on the roof. That was bad enough. I saw a video today of people actually photographing this person, the shooter, Crooks, up on the roof, and they're telling policemen, hey, there's a guy up on the roof. Look, there he is right there. He's crawling. He's got a gun. There's a guy. And, Donald Trump is not taken off stage. Donald Trump is allowed to continue
Well, then the police just ignore the warnings.
And the
people ignore the warnings. In fact, let me play just a little clip of the guy in the red hair. He's the first person that we heard tell this story. And yes, there have been many more since. And so this is clip one.
So we had a party here all day. You can see behind us the Brinkles Farming Greenhouse here. We had a party. And we all decided, hey, you know, when we hear Trump up there, we're going to walk up through the field, stand by the trees up there under the shade, and watch the, and listen to the rally, right? We couldn't see him, but we could hear him. So we walked up, and probably 5 to 7 minutes of Trump speaking, I'm estimating here, I have no idea, you know, but we noticed a guy crawling, bear crawling up the roof of the building beside us, 50 feet away from us. So we're standing there, and, you know, we're pointing at the guy crawling up the roof.
And he had a gun, right?
He had a rifle.
A rifle.
We could clearly see him with a rifle, absolutely. We're pointing at him. The police are down there running around on the ground. We're like, hey, man, there's guy on the roof with a rifle. And the police were like, huh, what? You know, like they didn't know what was going on. You know, we're like, hey, right here on the roof. We can see him from right here. We see him. You know, he's crawling. And next thing you know, I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, why is Trump still speaking? Why have they not pulled him off the stage? I'm standing there pointing at him for, you know, 2 or 3 minutes. Secret Service is looking at us from the top of the barn. I'm pointing at that roof, just standing there like this. And next thing you know, 5 shots ring out.
So you're certain that the shots came from that guy on the roof?
100%. 100%.
And he was up there for a couple of minutes.
He was up
you
there.
You saw him up there for a couple of minutes.
Absolutely. At least 3 to 4 minutes.
And you were telling the police and the Secret Service.
We were telling the police. We were pointing at him for the Secret Service. Who were looking at us from the top of the barn. They were looking at us the whole time when we were standing by that tree.
Could they see
binoculars.
Him? Could they see him?
Probably not, because the roof, the way the slope went, he was behind where they could see. But why is there not Secret Service on all of these roofs here? I mean, this is not a big place.
All right, so that's, Bruce, I just learned something this morning. I haven't even had a chance to tell you. This Susan Crabtree is a former, either Secret Service or FBI agent, I'm not sure. But she's posting about all of this. And she's saying that Secret Service resources were diverted to Jill Biden. Jill, J-I-L-L, who was also appearing in Pennsylvania on that day. And so they had to, according to 2 sources, she says, within the Secret Service community, there were also many supplemental agents from different field officers, not Trump's regular detail, providing security at the rally because Trump's regular detail has been overworked, some working 7 days straight, and only 2 counter snipers.
Well, and just what we were talking about, what would explain this? Why there's 2 explanations that could come out of this. Why someone is allowed to be that close to the president with a rifle. If you want to be a conspiracy theorist, call me what you want. One is that it was a setup, that this was allowed to happen. And, you know, I'll just leave that hang right there, that this was allowed to happen. The other is that roof wasn't covered because there are not enough people on Donald Trump's detail. Now, there are whistleblowers ready to come forward from the Secret Service saying, we know that the people that are protecting Donald Trump with the Secret Service have requested additional resources and that they have been denied these resources. And, you know, the Secret Service was incredibly absent post-shooting on Saturday. No representatives, no statements. However,
Kimberly was in Colorado.
Yeah. However, the one statement they did put out early Sunday was a denial that Donald Trump's team had asked for additional resources. Oh. Now, I don't know who you want to believe. Guys that are willing to put their careers on the line being whistleblowers, because we've seen how whistleblowers have been treated in the past by the government, or some press officer with the Secret Service saying that didn't happen.
Well, there's a couple of other things about this. It's really very suspicious, Bruce. There are a couple other things about Kimberly Cheadle was on President Biden's private detail. In fact, I should play this second clip to illustrate that. This would be clip 17.
She would know. The 28-year veteran was on the team that evacuated Vice President Dick Cheney on 9/11, and she served on then-Vice President Biden's protective detail. He named her director in mid-2022. Amid a swirl of controversy over the agency deleting nearly all of its text messages from January 6th, the agency says that was due to a data migration.
System migrations happen. But I think for a lot of Americans, it just doesn't pass the smell test, given the timing and the volume of messages deleted.
Well, it's unfortunate that that would be the assumption that people would make. Our integrity is everything, and there was nothing nefarious attached to that.
Okay, so a couple of things, Bruce, I want to kind of distill here. You remember that Kamala Harris's Secret Service, the head of her detail, had a mental breakdown. Couple of weeks, she attacked her superior and has been treated for some sort of mental disorder. So there's a petition circulating inside the U.S. Secret Service that flags concerns about a number of recent Secret Service incidents indicative of inadequate training, a double standard in disciplinary actions, and a vulnerability to potential insider threats that could pose a risk to U.S. national security. 39 signatures so far from Secret Service agents. And then one last thing that you and I talked about privately, but I'll mention it here. The same Susan Crabtree said that the Secret Service policy on sniper shootings is that they can't shoot someone with a gun pointed at a president unless the person shoots first.
It's absolutely ridiculous. This is the same thing our troops faced in Afghanistan under Obama, is the rules of engagement. Anytime you give someone a gun with authority, they need to be told, how can I use this gun? When should I use it? Our shooting policy in the FBI was very clear. If someone is in imminent danger of death or bodily harm, you may use your weapon. Imminent danger means it looks like the person with the gun might be getting ready to use it. Well, I would say if you've got a person laying prone on a building roof with a long gun, in the vicinity of a presidential candidate pointing a gun that way, that's imminent danger. And these snipers, these counter-snipers, the reason they're up there is to stop people like that. They're to identify them and to stop them, not to wait until they shoot and then neutralize them. And my understanding is that is the protocol, that these snipers are not allowed to shoot unless the perpetrator shoots first. That is ridiculous. This whole thing could have been stopped if they would have been allowed to shoot this guy when he was aiming at Trump.
Oh, it's frightening, Bruce, and I think there's a lot of frightening things about it, and we're going to be hearing more about this. But the problem is, of course, you and I have lived through, even when we were still living in D.C., I will never forget as long as I live the day that Bernie Sanders supporter took those guns to the practice field where these Republican congressmen are going to practice, we're practicing, and tried to assassinate them. Because then the FBI came out and did a press conference like that same day. And the lead agent was, I'm not kidding, smirking.
Yes.
And they said, oh, they didn't know what the motive was. They didn't know. He just probably having problems at home or something to that effect. And you were still with the agency then. And we were just beside ourselves. So the FBI always says, what do they always say? We don't know the motive. They take care of the social media immediately. Remember the Nashville shooter?
Yeah.
They still haven't released it except for the Michael Patrick Leahy releasing it on his own, and now he's in trouble with the law.
Yeah, you have that transgender dossier that they refuse to release in Nashville. Think back to the Las Vegas shooting.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
That has still not been released as to what happened there.
No, it's twisted. So how can we possibly trust them?
And, you know, the Secret Service has already had a history with Donald Trump. You go back to 2017, the special agent in charge of the Denver office of the Secret Service was a woman named Carrie O'Grady. And her statement was, I wouldn't take a bullet for Trump.
Well, that's right. I'd forgotten about
now,
that.
Now, think about, this is the boss. This is the boss of the office saying, I wouldn't take a bullet for Trump. And now you expect the Secret Service, how do you expect them to behave?
That's just
you know, there's been a lot of talk about how the evacuation of Donald Trump was handled from that stage after he was shot. I hate to criticize too much. I mean, but I think if you just look at something from a logical standpoint, you looked at some of those people, and I'm going to pick on the women here. And look, I worked with a lot of great women at the FBI. This is not a blanket statement, but you have to look at physics and anatomy. Donald Trump is 6'3". Several of the women assigned to that detail were approximately 5.5 feet tall. And as you watch when they're forming a human shield, which takes a lot of guts. Look, I'm not questioning this person's bravery, but when you put your arms around Donald Trump and you're 5'5", there's a lot of Donald Trump still exposed, including from his shoulder to his head as they were marching him off.
She was the agent in the front between where the shooter was.
And I have to admit, Donald Trump was probably a little bit of a, he was a force to be handled that day. But the point is, the gentlemen that were on the detail, they were tall enough to cover Trump even when Trump was trying to raise his hand and stuff. The females that were in the front were not.
You know, I have to speak up on this because I am so, this is the book I need to write next. It really is. The delusion. It was a delusion that women are the same as men a long time before we had this transgender delusion that you could change your gender. Women are not the same as men. News headline, women are not the same as men. They have 30% less upper body strength. They cannot be in combat with men and do their job. They end up being, Saturday, watching that video, the little short agent who was the one in front of President Trump, not the tall men, and she's trying to form this huddle over him. You know, there's like five agents, and she's the one between the shooter and Donald Trump, this little shrimp. A girl, I'm sure she's stronger than I am, but she's not as strong and capable as those men. She should never have been in that position. And I noticed when they got to the steps and they're trying to bring Trump down, an agent on the ground had to reach up and help her. So I'm furious. And of course, we just heard Kimberly Cheadle talking about how that's her goal, you know. Diversity, equity, and inclusion, especially for women. And you notice there was like three or four women on the detail right down front. People have made the observation that one was quite heavy. She couldn't get her gun back in her holster. She kept fumbling. I am furious about that, Bruce. And that foolishness has got to change. I guess the only time the common sense reigns is when dollars are involved, because there still are no women football players in the NFL. And that's only because they can't play like the men can, but there's money to be made, so people don't say the unspoken. You know, there's no women's libbers trying to get in the NFL. So anyway, now that I've ranted, we have a lot to say. We're almost done, but I have some really good news. I have some really good news, and I have some observations that I think will excite you as much as they have thrilled me today. And so Bruce and I will talk just a few more minutes after this. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Abortions performed by Planned Parenthood were among the top leading causes of death in America, revealing the terrifying truth of the left's anti-life agenda. According to Planned Parenthood's 2022-23 annual report, abortions performed by the organization accounted for the top four leading causes of death. Think about that. Paid for by our tax dollars. And honestly, this freight train is going down the track so fast and so powerfully. It's really hard. It's going to be hard for us to stop this. And I think one of the best ways, I've said before, I'll say again, is preborn. Preborn, who is not part of the government, not part of the public debate or campaigns, but an organization that's simply providing ultrasounds for moms who are pregnant and doubting whether they should carry the baby to allow them to see their baby through ultrasound. It's an amazing process, and it actually works. When the moms see their babies, I think it doubles the chance that they will not take the life of their baby. You know, you can't beat those odds. If you'd like to help, $28 pays for one ultrasound, just one, and you can send however much you can afford. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
Get your popcorn, grab some friends, and get ready for the 1A Film Fest live stream event September 13th, 14th, and 15th. Everyone enjoys movies, so invite your friends and neighbors over for a live stream watch party. We are bringing you 12 amazing documentaries, which together tell the most powerful and complete story ever told. By exercising the First Amendment and using the power of film, and just in time before the election, prepare yourself for the most educational, entertaining, and emotional live stream event of the year, all for only $25. Don't miss this. Go to 1AFilmFest.com for your live stream ticket. Help us spread the word and educate America. That's 1AFilmFest.com. 1AFilmFest.com.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Congressman Matt Gaetz on the line. I want to get this tape real quick. And Monica, I didn't mean to cut you off. We'll come back to you. But this is one of our first leaders that I want to get on the program. There he is, Congressman Gaetz. Not a day I want to be talking to you about something like this. I'm sure you were home with the wife or canvassing your district, or maybe you were there supporting. I don't know what you were doing, Matt. Fill us in on your first reaction, and then we'll talk about what we know and what we don't know. Nice to see you, Congressman.
Yeah, certainly we are praying for the soul of the lost life. Yes. At the Trump rally today, and for that person's family. You never expect that when you go to a Trump rally that that's going to be your last day walking around the planet Earth, because these are patriotic and welcoming and, might I say, loving events. You and I have been to many of them. You've covered them. I've spoken at them. And here's what's ringing in my mind right now, Dan. Back in April, Benny Thompson, the leading Democrat on the Homeland Security Committee, called for President Trump to be stripped of his Secret Service protection.
That's what I was talking about. Thank you, Matt.
They wanted to take away his protections. That is a green light to anyone wanting to do President Trump harm for whatever reason. And they were literally saying, because of the sham prosecutions they'd set up against him, that he was unworthy of being protected. That is astonishing. And the message that sends to people is that violence is okay, and that you can hurt folks if you don't like the way their prospects are heading in a presidential contest. We haven't seen this in nearly half a century in our country. We never want to see it happen to anyone of any political party. And the fact that it's happened to President Trump shows that they will do anything to stop this man. They've tried to impeach him. They have tried to convict him. They have tried to gag him. They were trying to imprison him. And now they have tried to assassinate him. And every time they do this, the people become more committed to the vision for the country that he has for our success and our prosperity. And while we don't know much about the shooter or the security envelope, and there are a lot of important questions that I think you're starting to ask on those questions, what we do know is that President Trump is determined to save this country from the path of ruin that we are on, and the efforts to stop him are unlike any politician has ever faced in our country's history.
That, of course, was Matt Gaetz. And that kind of pivots to just some thoughts. You know, God was at work on Saturday. Now, Matt already said, he laid the groundwork right there, that they have, they, meaning the left, the haters, the people that hate President Trump, that really they, I'm not saying President Trump is God, but he does uphold righteous things. And he does protect Christians, and he is the one that appointed three Supreme Court judges that made it possible to overturn Roe versus Wade. They hate the things that he has done and what he stood for. And they've tried everything. They really have. Matt just lined it out. They tried impeaching twice. They've tried to destroy his reputation, and they've done a really good job of that. They've made him into a caricature when he used to be so popular. Remember that, Bruce? Yeah, everybody, athletes, black entertainers, everyone just absolutely loved him. And they've made his name like a dirty word. So they've managed to do him, hurt his business, his family's business. And then, of course, these felonies, these prosecutions. But let's just think about what God has done here. I think, you know, I think of a story in the Bible. It's in the book of Esther. And you will recall that Esther had an uncle Mordecai, and it came to his attention that Haman, who was one of the chief advisors to the king at the time, wanted to wipe out the Jewish people, wipe them from the face of the earth. And he had a way of doing that. And Mordecai told Esther, and Esther, knowing that she could be killed if she tried to approach the king, even though that sounds weird to us, went in with great courage and warned the king. And as Haman thought that he was going to hang Esther's uncle Mordecai because he was a Jewish leader, he prepared this big noose, this big platform, and he was salivating. He just knew he was going to see all the Jews slaughtered and Mordecai hung on that beautiful hangman's platform that he had designed. And in a flash, overnight, it was discovered by the king. Esther told him, and everything flipped. And guess who got hung on that platform and that noose? Why, it was Haman being hung by his own noose. So that my point is, they've tried to do everything. And I actually think that Saturday, first of all, the fact that those bullets missed President Trump, and that one because he turned his head just at that last moment, hit his ear rather than his head. We all know that was a miracle. And I want to read to you what Donald Trump said. Thank you to everyone for your thoughts and prayers yesterday, as it was God alone who prevented the unthinkable from happening. We will fear not, but instead remain resilient in our faith and defiant in the face of wickedness. That's just part of what he said, but that's a miracle too. President Trump often takes credit for things he shouldn't because he has a very high view of himself. Some people would say he has an accurate view because he is an incredible man. But he didn't say, I was strong, I overcame it. He said, it was God alone who prevented the unthinkable. I think that was a miracle. I think it was a miracle that Joe Biden, who was struggling to maintain his position as the Democratic candidate, is now the Democratic candidate. There's nothing they can do, almost nothing, unless he dies himself or, you know, but just in terms of process, I think all those grand plans that I shared with you a few days ago, I told you about what the Obama people were planning on having this truncated convention and selection process and how they were going to orchestrate it. I think that's dead in the water, dead in the water. I was listening to, Bruce and I both were listening to this guy give his telling of what happened. He was sitting behind the president, and he said as soon as the shooting took place, he and the people around him began to recite the Lord's Prayer over and over and over again. And when they finished that, they all started shouting, USA, USA. Now, USA is not our God. I know that. And yet, there was an acknowledgement, an understanding that God was doing something miraculous in that moment. And then Trump's pivot is nothing more than a miracle. So I believe the worm is turning. And I didn't tell you, I've told you at this microphone so many times, I didn't think Trump could prevail. My mind has changed. Bruce, how about yours? Do you think he can win now, given all of this?
Well, I think he will win. Now, whether he will actually get office, I don't know, because of the cheating. The cheating is the one thing that holds me back from saying Donald Trump will be the president. However, If you're asking me, will he get the most legitimate votes in this election? Absolutely.
Yeah, I think so, too. I've got a whole bunch of things I was going to read from people who were never Trumpers, who couldn't stand him, who said they couldn't believe his bravery. And I hope all of you have seen the video. He was just amazing. He just got up and he holds up his fist because he wanted the crowd to know he was okay. And that's when they started chanting USA, USA, because there was like a holy hush over that crowd. Bruce, people have observed how that crowd responded. What were your thoughts about that?
I was amazed, actually, at the calmness, because you have to remember, not only was Donald Trump shot, but that gentleman that ended up dying was shot in front of them, and he was shot in the head, and that had to be gruesome. There were two other people that were gravely wounded, so you have four people shot in front of them, and instead of running for their own protection or, you know, really just losing it, I saw lots of people looking to help, looking to see if there were any other threats. And this was happening literally 10 to 20 feet in front of them. And they were there ready to go. Yeah. I thought it was a real testament to people.
Yeah, they're the deplorables that attend President Trump's. Like, remember Biden said last week, yeah, but look at the kind of people that attend his rally.
Yeah, that's exactly what he said. Like we're all, you know, anyone who goes to those rallies is a terrible person. And I think it really showed on Saturday. It was a horrific event. But out of horrific events, oftentimes good things are shown to happen. And I think the reaction of that crowd was one of the best things that showed out of that.
And the reaction of President Trump was just amazing.
You know,
his courage, who could deny he loves this country. Why would you do that? Why would you go through that? He could be home living in his mansions, but he's not. And so one last thing, one last bit of business here. Oh,
and can I say one more thing on that, honey?
Sure.
We have heard a lot of people talk that they don't think Donald Trump is a very good person, and they're not going to vote for Biden, but they're also not going to bother to vote for Trump because they don't want to, I guess, be tarred with that
tainted ickiness.
Tainted.
Yeah.
I can tell you that is a foolish position. I don't care what you think about me saying that. That is a foolish position.
Why?
Because anytime you don't vote for someone, it means the other person is getting a vote. That they, you know, they don't have to overcome your vote. And also, if you cannot set aside, more importantly, I think, if you cannot set aside some little personal grievance you have with Donald Trump, when you compare that to what he has done for this country, what he is doing for this country, and what he will do for this country if elected, I think you're a small person.
Yeah, I do think Christians get hung up on words. Like, and they judge people so harshly. Donald Trump has never claimed to be a Christian. He's never said that. Never. He doesn't said, oh, he said his mother was a Christian. I think he talked about their family Bible. But he's never claimed that. And I don't know why Christians are so harsh, the fact that he acts like a non-Christian. His language, you know, having women in the past when he was a billionaire, a good-looking billionaire. Well, what would you do if you weren't a Christian? You do what the flesh calls on you, and you do it. And so I don't know why people feel so superior to him in that. But you know what, honey? I have faith. This sounds silly because I'm not a charismatic. I don't faith for faith's sake. But I have faith in a loving, faithful God who has shown himself in this to be so faithful and involved. I believe he's answering prayers, the prayers of people like at that rally. Whose first response was to pray. And I think there were many of them like that. Not everyone, I'm sure, but there are so many people who love him in this country and are crying out that God would spare. And I would hasten to say, not spare it the way it is. We have to change it. If Donald Trump should get elected, the last thing you and I need to do, all of you, we cannot retreat to that 9/11 status where we were all rallying together and trying to save our country and going to churches, and then as soon as the thing calmed down, we forgot all about it, business as usual. Don't do that. Don't do that. We have to still fight for the moral fiber of our country and for our children. And one last thing I want to say, the reason I just feel like God is at work, Eileen Cannon, who was the judge in the U.S. District in Florida, has dismissed the classic the classified documents case against former President Trump. And she said in her 98-page ruling that Special Counsel Jack Smith was unlawfully appointed by Attorney General Merrick Garland. That took guts also.
And I will say that you hit it on the head when you said 98-page opinion. She did not decide to do this just based upon Donald Trump almost being assassinated on Saturday. She based this on legal standing, and but still, that took a lot of gumption to dismiss this case.
Absolutely, and she did it. And so, and as we're talking here, something else might have happened. But I just want you all to be encouraged. President Trump decided to go to the RNC. He said he's not going to let the shooter stop him. And so there'll be things at the RNC that will disappoint us. There's certainly moral issues that trouble me. But in the overall picture of things and the overall scheme of things, I guess the bottom line is God is at work. God is at work. Be encouraged. Let your heart just enjoy and thank him. Thank him. On our knees to thank him. And so that's all. That's all we have to say, I think, honey, unless you have something to add.
No, but I am so thankful that the Lord protected Donald Trump on Saturday, and now hopefully it has seeped into his soul what happened.
Yes.
And that God did protect him.
Yes.
And that he will be a changed man.
I do too. I think I was inferring that, but that's exactly what, me too, Bruce, and me too. And for the transformation of this country is what we're praying for. Well, I want to thank you for listening. Thank you for your patient listening today. And I want to thank our sponsors. Timothy Plan, of course, is our new sponsor, where you can put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy, or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.